Chapter 68. As fraught with some danger to Miss Nickleby's peace of mind, the place was a handsome suite of private apartments in Regent Street. The time was 3 o'clock in the afternoon to the dull and plodding, and the first hour of morning to the gay and spirited. The persons were Lord Frederick Verisopht, and his friend Sir Mulberry Hawk. These distinguished gentlemen were reclining listlessly on a couple of sofas, with a table between them, on which were scattered in rich confusion the materials of an untasted breakfast. Newspapers lay strewn about the room, but these, like the meal, were neglected and unnoticed. Not, however, because any flow of conversation prevented the attractions of the journals from being called into request, for not a word was exchanged between the two, nor was any sound uttered, save when one, in tossing about to find an easier resting place for his aching head, uttered an exclamation of impatience, and seemed for a moment to communicate a new restlessness to his companion. These appearances would in themselves have furnished a pretty strong clue to the extent of the debauch of the previous night, even if there had not been other indications of the amusements in which it had been passed. A couple of billiard balls, all mud and dirt, two battered hats, a champagne bottle with a soiled glove twisted round the neck, to allow of its being grasped more surely in its capacity of an offensive weapon, a broken cane, a card case without the top, an empty purse, a watch guard snapped asunder, a handful of silver, mingled with fragments of half-smoked cigars, and their stale and crumbled ashes. These, and many other tokens of riot and disorder, hinted very intelligibly at the nature of last night's gentlemanly frolics. Lord Frederick Verisopht was the first to speak. Dropping his slippered foot on the ground, and, yawning heavily, he struggled into a sitting posture, and turned his dull languid eyes towards his friend, to whom he called in a drowsy voice. "Hallo!" replied Sir Mulberry, turning round. "Are we going to lie here all day, why?" said the Lord. "I don't know that we're fit for anything else," replied Sir Mulberry. "Yet a while, at least. I haven't a grain of life in me this morning." "Life!" cried Lord Verisopht. "I feel as if there would be nothing so snug and comfortable as to die at once."
"Then why don't you die?"
said Sir Mulberry. With which inquiry he turned his face away, and seemed to occupy himself in an attempt to fall asleep. His hopeful fiend and pupil drew a chair to the breakfast table, and essayed to eat, but, finding that impossible, lounged to the window, then loitered up and down the room with his hand to his fevered head, and finally threw himself again on his sofa, and roused his friend once more. "What the devil's the matter?" groaned Sir Mulberry, sitting upright on the couch. Although Sir Mulberry said this with sufficient ill humor, he did not seem to feel himself quite at liberty to remain silent, for, after stretching himself very often, and declaring with a shiver that it was infernal cold, he made an experiment at the breakfast table, and proving more successful in it than his less seasoned friend, remained there. "Suppose," said Sir Mulberry, pausing with a morsel on the point of his fork, "suppose we go back to the subject of little Nickleby, eh?" "Which little Nickleby? The moneylender, or the Gael?" asked Lord Verisopht. "You take me, I see," replied Sir Mulberry. "The girl, of course. You promised me you'd find her out," said Lord Verisopht. "So I did," rejoined his friend, "but I have thought further of the matter since then. You distrust me in the business, you shall find her out yourself." remonstrated Lord Verisopht. "But I say yes," returned his friend. "You shall find her out yourself. Don't think that I mean, when you can. I know as well as you that if I did, you could never get sight of her without me. No. I say you shall find her out, and I'll put you in the way.
apostrophe, now, curse me, if you ain't a real, devilish, downright, thorough-paced friend, apostrophe, said the young lord, on whom this speech had produced a most reviving effect. I'll tell you how, apostrophe, said Sir Mulberry. She was at that dinner as a bait for you. Apostrophe, no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the young lord. What the day apostrophe, as a bait for you, apostrophe, repeated his friend. Old Nickleby told me so himself. Apostrophe, what a fine old cock it is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Lord Verisoft. A noble rascal. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, apostrophe, said Sir Mulberry. He knew she was a smart little creature, apostrophe, smart. Apostrophe, apostrophe, interposed the young lord. Upon my soul, Hawk, she's a perfect beauty, a picture, a statue, upon my soul she is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, apostrophe, replied Sir Mulberry, shrugging his shoulders and manifesting an indifference, whether he felt it or not. That's a matter of taste. If mine doesn't agree with yours, so much the better. Apostrophe, confound it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, reasoned the lord. You were thick enough with her that day, anyhow. I could hardly get in a word. Apostrophe, well enough for once, well enough for once, apostrophe, replied Sir Mulberry. But not worth the trouble of being agreeable to again. If you seriously want to follow up the niece, tell the uncle that you must know where she lives, and how she lives, and with whom, or you are no longer a customer of his. He'll tell you fast enough. Apostrophe, why didn't you say this before? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Lord Verisoft, instead of letting me go on burning, consuming, dragging out a miserable existence for an age. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I didn't know it, in the first place, apostrophe, answered Sir Mulberry carelessly, and in the second, I didn't believe you were so very much in earnest. Apostrophe, now, the truth was, that in the interval which had elapsed since the dinner at Ralph Nickleby's, Sir Mulberry Hawk had been furtively trying by every means, in his power to discover whence Kate had so suddenly appeared, and whither she had disappeared. Unassisted by Ralph, however, with whom he had held no communication since their angry parting on that occasion, all his efforts were wholly unavailing, and he had therefore arrived at the determination of communicating to the young lord the substance of the admission he had gleaned from that worthy. To this he was impelled by various considerations, among which the certainty of knowing whatever the weak young man knew was decidedly not the least, as the desire of encountering the usurer's niece again, and using his utmost arts to reduce her pride, and revenge himself for her contempt, was uppermost in his thoughts. It was a politic course of proceeding, and one which could not fail to redound to his advantage in every point of view, since the very circumstance of his having extorted from Ralph Nickleby his real design in introducing his niece to such society, coupled with his extreme disinterestedness in communicating it so freely to his friend, could not but advance his interests in that quarter, and greatly facilitate the passage of coin, pretty frequent, and speedy already, from the pockets of Lord Frederick Verisoft to those of Sir Mulberry Hawk. Thus reasoned Sir Mulberry, and in pursuance of this reasoning he, and his friend soon afterwards repaired to Ralph Nickleby's, there to execute a plan of operations concerted by Sir Mulberry himself, avowedly to promote his friend's object, and really to attain his own. They found Ralph at home, and alone. As he led them into the drawing room, the recollection of the scene which had taken place there seemed to occur to him, for he cast a curious look at Sir Mulberry, who bestowed upon it no other acknowledgement than a careless smile. They had a short conference upon some money matters then in progress, which were scarcely disposed of when the lordly dupe, in pursuance of his friend's instructions, requested with some embarrassment to speak to Ralph alone. Alone, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Sir Mulberry, affecting surprise. Oh, very good. I'll walk into the next room here. Don't keep me long, that's all. apostrophe, so saying, Sir Mulberry took up his hat, and humming a fragment of a song disappeared through the door of communication between the two drawing rooms, and closed it after him. Now, my lord, apostrophe said Ralph, what is it? Apostrophe, Nickleby, apostrophe said his client, throwing himself along the sofa on which he had been previously seated, so as to bring his lips nearer to the old man's ear, what a pretty creature your niece is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, is she, my lord? Apostrophe, apostrophe, replied Ralph. Maybe, maybe I don't trouble my head with such matters. Apostrophe, you know she's a devilish fine girl, apostrophe said the client. You must know that, Nickleby. Come, don't deny that. Apostrophe, yes, I believe she is considered so, apostrophe replied Ralph. Indeed, I know she is. If I did not, you are an authority on such points, and your taste, my lord on all points, indeed is undeniable. Apostrophe, nobody but the young man to whom these words were addressed could have been deaf to the sneering tone in which they were spoken, or blind to the look of contempt by which they were accompanied. But Lord Frederick Verisopht was both, and took them to be complimentary. Well, apostrophe, he said, perhaps you're a little right, and perhaps you're a little wrong, a little of both, Nickleby. I want to know where this beauty lives, that I may have another peep at her, Nickleby. Apostrophe, really apostrophe, Ralph began in his usual tones. Don't talk so loud, apostrophe cried the other, achieving the great point of his lesson to a miracle. I don't want talk to hear. Apostrophe, you know he is your rival, do you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Ralph, looking sharply at him. He always is, damn him, apostrophe replied the client, and I want to steal a march upon him. Ha, ha, ha. He'll cut up so rough, Nickleby, at our talking together without him. Where does she live, Nickleby, that's all. Only tell me where she lives, Nickleby. Apostrophe, he bites, apostrophe thought Ralph. He bites. Apostrophe, a, Nickleby, a? Apostrophe, apostrophe, pursued the client. Where does she live? Apostrophe, really, my lord, apostrophe said Ralph, rubbing his hands slowly over each other, I must think, before I tell you. Apostrophe, no, not a bit of it, Nickleby, you mustn't think at all, apostrophe replied Verisopht. Where is it? Apostrophe, no good can come of your knowing, apostrophe replied Ralph. She has been virtuously and well brought up. To be sure she is handsome, poor, unprotected. Poor girl, poor girl. Apostrophe, Ralph ran over this brief summary of Kate's condition, as if it were merely passing through his own mind, and he had no intention to speak aloud. But the shrewd sly look which he directed at his companion as he delivered it, gave this poor assumption the lie. I tell you I only want to see her, apostrophe cried his client. A man may look at a pretty woman without harm, mayn't he? Now, where does she live? You know you're making a fortune out of me, Nickleby, and upon my soul nobody shall ever take me to anybody else, if you only tell me this. Apostrophe, as you promised that, my lord, apostrophe said Ralph, with feigned reluctance, and as I am most anxious to oblige you, and as there's no harm in it, no harm I'll tell you. But you had better keep it to yourself, my lord, strictly to yourself. Apostrophe Ralph pointed to the adjoining room as he spoke, and nodded expressively. The young lord, feigning to be equally impressed with the necessity of this precaution, Ralph disclosed the present address and occupation of his niece, observing that from what he heard of the family they appeared very ambitious to have distinguished acquaintances, and that a lord could, doubtless, introduce himself with great ease, if he felt disposed. Your object being only to see her again, apostrophe said Ralph, you could effect it at any time you chose by that means. Apostrophe, Lord Verisopht acknowledged the hint with a great many squeezes of Ralph's hard, horny hand, and whispering that they would now do well to close the conversation, called to Sir Mulberry Hawk, that he might come back. I thought you had gone to sleep, apostrophe said Sir Mulberry, reappearing with an ill-tempered air. Sorry to detain you, apostrophe replied the gull, but Nickleby has been so amazingly funny that I couldn't tear myself away. Apostrophe, no, no, apostrophe said Ralph. It was all his lordship. You know what a witty, humorous, elegant, accomplished man Lord Frederick is. Mind the step, my lord Sir Mulberry, pray give way. Apostrophe, with such courtesies as these, and many low bows, and the same cold sneer upon his face all the while, Ralph busied himself in showing his visitors downstairs, and otherwise than by the slightest possible motion about the corners of his mouth, returned no show of answer to the look of admiration with which Sir Mulberry Hawk seemed to compliment him on being such an accomplished and most consummate scoundrel. There had been a ring at the bell a few minutes before, which was answered by Newman Knox just as they reached the hall. In the ordinary course of business, Newman would have either admitted the newcomer in silence, or have requested him or her to stand aside, while the gentleman passed out. But he no sooner saw who it was, than as if for some private reason of his own, he boldly departed from the established custom of Ralph's mansion in business hours, and looking towards the respectable trio who were approaching, cried in a loud and sonorous voice, Mrs. Nickleby! Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Nickleby! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Sir Mulberry Hawk, as his friend looked back, and stared him in the face. It was, indeed, that well-intentioned lady, who, having received an offer for the empty house in the city directed to the landlord, had brought it post-haste to Mr. Nickleby without delay. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.